Okay, welcome back. We are talking about relationship coaching within the context of matchmaking, and we're going to move on to coaching in week 4. So previously we talked about an exercise that I call identifying someone's love map, and that is a 3-part assignment. Two of those parts are homework, which we then review together, and then we do part number 3 together as well. After we review that, then we move on to our next topic. And this topic in Coaching Week 4 is the Match Made in Eden review. So at this point, you're going to talk to your client about men's roles in a relationship, women's roles in a relationship, vision and leadership, and the importance of that, and the kingdom principles, God's kingdom principles for relationships. So that whole big, long first session that we did, you get to try and condense down into about 30 minutes. for your presentation with your clients. Now, one thing that I do with my one-hour sessions is that I actually book myself at least a 30-minute buffer. And the reason I do that is because I am not a therapist, right? I'm a coach and I'm a matchmaker. My interest is not getting reimbursed by an insurance company for a 50-minute session. My interest is getting the job done and accomplishing everything that we need to accomplish. So if it takes me an hour and a half to review all of the material and answer all of the questions the client has so that I can wrap it up really nice with a pretty little bow on top, then it takes an hour and a half. So I don't confine myself to, you know, 50 minutes or an hour or that type of a thing. Now, nonetheless, if you go past an hour and a half, then people get tired and it's hard for people to listen because, again, this is the first time that they're getting a lot of this information, so it's kind of overwhelming in a dump, right? These are all important things to go over, and certainly you can recommend that they have supplemental additional resources if they want to go deeper into these topics. And on the matchmakingministry.com website, we actually have some classes that are going to be coming out for singles that they can take and go deeper into any of these topics with us. So that's somewhere that you can refer them as well. And then we have homework assignment number 4. So now that they've learned about the kingdom principles, now that they've learned about epigenetics and oxytocin and science and so many of the other things that we have discussed with them, and they've really learned some things about themselves and what they're looking for, you're going to ask them for the next week assignment to make a new list. Hey, Susie, based on everything that we talked about, do you feel like anything on your list might have changed? Can you make me a new list? And then I have another assignment for you. I want you to make your matches list. So when you describe this dream partner to me on your list, we'll call him John. Who's John looking for? What does John's list look like? So now I want you to pretend you're John, get inside John's head, and write John's list. And next week we'll review those two items in our week 5 coaching session. So week 5, you're going to go ahead and review your homework. How's the list changed? How have you changed? And you also want to review this list, we'll say, of, for example, John. And that goes back to our previous question. Is the person that you're looking for you? Are they looking for something different? Is there something that you need to improve? I don't want to say change, but I want to say improve. Is there something you need to improve? Are there some habits you need to let go of, right? You know, if you are really wanting to meet a Christian guy and who's really committed to the Lord and really living in the garden, right? He's having an Eden experience. And you're going out drinking and partying every Friday night with your friends, are you the kind of girl that he's really interested in meeting? So sometimes we've got to think about some of those things and maybe change or adapt or improve our behavior, our habits, or even some of the ways that we're conducting ourselves. Okay, so then we want to review the professional photos. So in your very first session, you ask them to get their photos done, and you are going to set a goal and a time limit. Most men would rather go get a proctology exam than get their photos taken. I am not kidding you. I get a lot of resistance. Guys do not want to get their photos taken. And so you want to set a time limit, or it's not going to happen, right? So, okay, Bob, by session 5, I really want your photos back. Okay. Now, a lot of times they'll get their photos taken. They get them sent in a digital format, many times in a Dropbox. Their photographer will put them into a Dropbox. So you have to tell them, please ask your photographer to add me to the permissions on the Dropbox so I can see your photos. And here's what the men really like that I tell them. Listen, follow my directions. Go get your photos taken. Okay, you're probably going to have 3 or 350 photos that the photographer takes, and literally 6 or 8 will be good. That says nothing about you. It is the same situation if you're Cindy Crawford or a professional model. Okay, but I just want you to show up and smile, and you never have to think about it again. Have your photographer give me access. I will go through all of your photos for you, and I will pick the ones that I like best. I want 3 to 5 really great photos that we're going to use. And so I'll worry about it. And so at that point, we're going to review their photos. Hopefully, I've had access, and I can say, here's the photos that I picked. Right? I think they're really awesome. And then I am going to give them a profile template. If they had an online dating profile, they are going to rewrite it now based on everything that we've learned. And a lot of times in our sessions, we've talked about men's roles and women's roles, and they have a completely different insight now into what men are looking for. Right? All of a sudden, they've learned for the first time that men really want to be respected and admired, and women want to be loved and cherished, right? So maybe they're going to use some of those words in their profile. So I give them a template, and then with their own words, they go in through and make it their own at that point based on everything that we have learned. These profiles get so much more attention if they're going to go back to online dating or use it to supplement matchmaking, so much more attention than the first profiles that they previously had. It is incredible, the increase in with the new photos and a new profile, the higher quality, better dates that people get. Just these two factors can really change the experience of online dating for them. So this is a really good exercise to go through. Then at that time, they're either going to go out on their own, and the people who've gone through coaching with me and don't continue to matchmaking have a much higher success rate out on their own than they were having before. Their results are totally different. Now, the other thing about online dating profiles is that I tell people to be very specific about what it is that they want. So you've done the list. You have, for example, your number one criteria. It's non-negotiable. You're never going to change it. Somebody who does not fit that is never going to be an option for you. Let's say that that's Christianity, right? And we've also already talked about the fact that people filter themselves constantly because they're afraid that they're going to scare people away. So here's what I say to my Christian clients. If you're going to do online dating, I don't care if you're on Match.com, eHarmony, whatever it is, you know, some swiping thing, appy thing, right? I don't care. There is one word that I want you to put prominently in your profile, and that word is Jesus. And they're scared to do it. Oh, no, I might scare people away. I don't care. Put it in there. It's your number one criteria. Right? The results that they get are totally and completely different than the results that they were getting before. And while initially they're scared, they're going to scare people away, they actually wind up attracting people who are so refreshed that they are seeing somebody who is actually willing to put that on their profile that, you know, they aggressively contact them, right? So it's a really important point that I wanted to mention. Whatever that number one non-negotiable thing is, you got to put it in there. If you want to get married and you want to have a baby and you're pushing 40, stop being afraid of scaring people away. You know, and women are discouraged all the time. Don't say your biological clock is ticking. You know, you might scare men away. So, real men are not scared easily, right? They're not. So put it out there. Do you want a man who's easily frightened? I don't. So the next thing that we want to do is refer them either to our DIY system or professional matchmaking. So as we had talked about before, once clients are done with the coaching, if they decide they want to work with a matchmaker one-on-one professionally, I go ahead and credit their coaching off and deduct that from the matchmaking. However, we do also have a system, and at this point we just need enough matchmaking ministers to participate, where people who have actually gone through the process of meeting with the matchmaking minister, going through the consultation, hopefully doing some of our online classes or coaching, can then go into our DIY system, and they can meet people locally and all over the world who have also met with the matchmaking minister and gone through our process. So it's a completely private network. It's not public. It's not online dating. It's not open to anyone. They don't necessarily want to hire a matchmaker to go through the process of that themselves. So I would say, based on my estimation, because certainly there are people in matchmaking, they value privacy. You know, maybe they own a company. They're in a prominent position, whatever it is. They don't want to be seen publicly, or they want a higher level of service, they're too busy, whatever it is. But I estimate probably about 40% of our people will want to go into the DIY system and connect with each other that way. So we definitely want to make sure that we carry them on to whatever the next steps are. We also want to let them know that we're available to continue coaching them through the dating process and even into getting a commitment. So I think that is also important as well. And let me go back and mention one more thing. I met a matchmaker. She was from China. And she was so interesting because, of course, there can be arranged marriages. There's a lot of things that people do differently in other cultures. And I love learning about matchmaking in other cultures. In China, they actually have a licensing system for matchmakers. And they have an internet system that connects all of the matchmakers to be able to match people together, like what we have. But it's actually overseen, for example, here we have, like, you know, if you're a realtor, you get a real estate license and you've got to take a test and overseen by, like, the board of realtors or whatever it is. It's like that in China for matchmakers, which is really cool. And so my friend Helen, who I met that is a matchmaker, was telling me about the fact that people get together much more quickly. There's nobody who's, like, dating for, like, 3 years in this system, right? They get together much more quickly. And she feels like her job begins as a matchmaker when they actually make a commitment to each other and they decide they're going to get married. So she coaches them not only up to the commitment period, but she also coaches them for the first 6 months to a year of marriage. And she tells them, every time you get into a fight, you need to pick up the phone and call me, and I'm going to talk you through it. And so that's what she does. And so it really opened my eyes to the way that not only are we letting people down in the dating process and they're all alone, fighting in the landmines of the internet, and online dating, but then we're dropping them as well and not giving them support in the matchmaking world in America once they say, I want to go on a second date with somebody. And then we disappear, right? And they disappear. So I think we're really doing people a disservice by doing that, because let's think about it. A lot of times clients are coming to us because they can't get past the second date or the third date, or they can't get those couple of dates to turn into a relationship or a commitment, right? So I think that it's really important that we let the clients know that we are there for them. And then, of course, you know, after they're married, you know, there's some things you might be able to help them with, but maybe you have one of those referral partners where you can send them if they need any additional help. But hopefully you've prepared them so well that that they're not going to need that, that they're going to become a mentor for other people, and maybe even a matchmaking minister. So let's go ahead now and go into the process of matchmaking. These are the principles and foundations of matchmaking as a ministry. One of the things I'm going to talk about is the other ways that people can meet someone in addition to meeting a matchmaker, so you know where matchmaking compares to what else is available to people out there in the world. So the first thing that we have is online dating. Most subscribers quit online dating within 90 days. A couple years ago, Match.com had a big marketing campaign, and a lot of you probably saw it, which was sign up for 6 months and get 6 months for free. Well, if you've signed up for 6 months, they've essentially doubled the revenue that they were typically making. And then if they give you 6 months for free, they've essentially kept you in their inventory for three times longer than you were really inclined to stay in their inventory in the first place, right? So most subscribers quit online dating in 90 days or less. When you have people who are feeling bad about online dating, tell them about this. They feel like everybody that they know and their uncle and cousin and brother have met online, and it's not true. 34% of subscribers never actually go out on a date. Only 11% of those who message actually meet in person. Now, there's also a big marketing campaign that talked about the fact that one in every five couples meets online. The real number is 18%, so they rounded it up to 20 and called it one in five. What does that mean? It sounds really good. Oh my gosh, one in five people are meeting online? Let's turn it around. Four in five people, 82%, do not meet online. This is a really important statistic. Now, how do people meet before the internet? They met by being introduced from friends and family, right? Our churches have dropped the ball, and a matchmaker is just really becomes another friend or family who is spending their time professionally, or at least as a hobby, really focused on this. So dating services is another option. Dating services match clients with clients. So there is a small pool of self-selecting candidates. What does that mean? It means only people who walk in the door of that dating service are going to get matched with each other. So it might be, for example, think about it this way. If only the people who walk in the door of your church are going to be only matched with other people in your church, how many people do you think are going to wind up not being matched? It's a small pool. It's fishing in a very small pond. Not everybody meets somebody in their home church that they grew up in. Additionally, when I talk about self-selecting candidates, there's a certain personality type of people who are willing to walk into a dating service, take the risk of a stranger matching them, and spend the money, right? So we also have kind of like a subgroup of a group of people, really, who are willing to make the investment in going to a dating service. Now, dating services, generally they meet with a salesperson, but they're matched by an admin in another city, state, or location. So the person who met with them and really got to know them for about an hour probably is not going to be matching them, or might have some input into matching them, but it's not their primary job. So that's a dating service. Matchmaking. Matchmakers are headhunters and recruiters for love. So matchmakers can find matches from anywhere that they want to match with their clients. Some other places that they find people are a database. So anybody that you come across who's single, even if they don't wind up being a client of yours, you want to put them in your database. I have met people at the grocery store, in line at a grocery store, given them my business card and signed them up in my database. Everywhere I go, I meet people who I wind up putting in my database. Right? So it seems kind of rude to be at a grocery store and ask somebody, you know, oh, you might be a good match for one of my clients. Would you like to pay a membership fee? Right? No. But I have some clients who might be a good match for you that would be really interested in meeting you. Would you be interested in being in my database? Of course, right? So really want to get people in your database, on your mailing list. The software that we have maintains this, but there are certainly other plenty of tools. Even if you keep a handwritten list, I don't care. And I have a lady that I met 2 years ago that I want to match with somebody that I recently met that would be great. So luckily I have her on file. I've got all her information, right? You might hire or work with scouts. Scouts can be people that you hire to go to certain events, certain types of places that you're really targeting that you think might have the type of people that you would like to meet. Different events, charity events, nonprofit fundraisers, those types of things. So you might hire people to go to those types of things and hand out business cards, get business cards, network. And there might be scouts who are just kind of unofficial scouts. There are people that you network with that are in high contact positions. For example, a membership sales director at a country club might be a great person for you to get to know. And when you have a client that you're searching for, if you don't find them in your database, you might call Beverly over at the Silver Lake Country Club, for example, and say, hey, you know, I've got this client. Let me tell you about him. Is there anybody that you might know that would be a good match for him? So networking is extremely important with matchmaking. You can also collaborate with other matchmakers. And again, we have the technology. We're going to put all of the matchmaking ministers in a private network where they can help each other match clients. Matchmaking has a much higher success rate because, of course, you can swim in a much larger pool. You can also go on to internet dating sites, which I do very extremely rarely, unless I'm looking for some very niche specific thing, but you can also go on internet dating websites. There's one internet dating website where I know the owner, and he's given me explicit permission to go and contact any of his members for somebody that I'm looking for, which is really great. So matchmaking has a higher success rate because you're casting a much wider net. And the focus of the matchmaker is really on matching the client, not meeting a sales quota and not meeting a quota of matches. I never give a quota of matches. If you sign up for 6 months, we'll give you 10 matches. I never do that. Do unlimited matches. We will give you as many matches as we can that are going to meet your criteria. I also like to send one match at a time. If you send them out on a match and they kind of sort of like the person, they're not really sure and they haven't completely gotten to know them, and then you throw somebody else in the mix, you can really screw up what could organically, after a couple meetings, grow into something nice. And especially when I have introverted men. My introverted men, I say a lot of times to the women, they do not make the best daters, but they make the best husbands, right? They're not silver tongues, they're not slick, they're not great at dating, but a lot of men who are very good at dating are good at dating because they like it and they want to keep doing it, right? So I handle my introverted men just very carefully. And so the one date at a time, I think, is a good process. Now, I also have some other time frames that we had talked about that we're going to talk about. So after three dates, I want the gentleman to decide if he's interested in getting to know her better or not. Three dates is enough. I do think that just deciding after one date, at least if there's enough of your criteria that's there, and this is somebody who's been, mind you, handpicked for you, that there's good reason to try and get to know that person better. They could have been nervous on the first date. It could have been just like not a great day for them. It could have been just a weird environment. Sometimes you go to a restaurant and it's just really loud in there and you have a hard time hearing, right? So I do like to encourage three dates if at least the criteria is there. And after three dates, I want the gentleman to make a decision. Not that the woman doesn't have any input in this, but, you know, she might still be very interested. So I want him to decide, do I want to get to know this woman better or not? And if not, I we want to then give feedback on both sides and move on to the next match for both people, right? After 90 days, I want the gentleman to decide if he is interested in getting to know her exclusively. So I put a 90-day frame time on that. So at that point, he's going to say, look, I want to set aside dating other people so that we can really focus on getting to know each other. I think that's fair. 90 days. After 90 days, I have another benchmark of 6 months. After 6 months, if he is not interested in exploring her as an option of somebody who would like to marry, then I want him to move on. Now, a lot of times guys will say to me, because I give them the responsibility of implementing these deadlines, and a lot of times they'll say to me, well, I don't want to hurt her feelings, or I don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. That is actually a very selfish answer. It's not that you don't want to hurt your feelings, it's that you don't want to feel bad because you hurt her feelings. Because when you set her free to go out and find somebody who actually is very interested in her, who does want to commit to her, you're doing something kind to her. And continuing to date a woman that you're really not interested in, especially when that drags on for 2, 3, 4 years. I'm not talking about people in their 20s who are trying to finish up college. I'm talking about people in their 30s and 40s. To date a woman for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, it is stealing. It is theft. And it's not okay. You're taking her young, beautiful, reproductively fertile best years, and you're not willing to commit to her. So that's not okay with me. So that's why I have these time frames, and I try to not strictly enforce them, right, because it's not ultimately my choice, but I do try to follow up on them and remind people and you know, really express the importance of them.